Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to episode 127 of Rogue Startups. Mr. Craig, how the heck are you?
Man, I'm good. I'm doing really good. We have vacation coming up here soon next week, so it'll be the tumultuous time of the kids being off from school and me trying to work for 2 weeks, but I'm sure we'll survive. But no, things are good. How about yourself?
Well, things are good here as well. The vacation bit has already come and passed. It's always fun to see how out of sync the U.S. and Europe are in that regard. But, you know, you guys start back to school so much later. Like, our school is going to be out in less than 8 weeks at this point. May 24th is the day. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, spring break was the 17th through the 23rd or 4th or something like that. And we took off and went to Santa Fe, New Mexico for a few days. And true to form, as is the Rodenbaugh tradition every year, one or more of my daughters got sick. In this case, all three of them decided to have it at once. And we said, fuck it, we're going anyway.
That's a kick in the nuts, right? I mean, that's just horrible.
You know, it is. And the first few times you're like, oh, we just can't do anything. And this time I was like, all right, the kids are older. Nobody's throwing up. Nobody's bleeding from their gums. Yeah, we got one kid with a fever. This might be a questionable parenting decision, but they can power through it. Let's just go. That was my thinking as we're loading up the car and getting ready to Santa Fe with my daughter running a low-grade fever. And one of them coughing like she had bronchitis and the other one just not feeling very well. But, you know, I will say that there was a happy ending to all of this story. We did the six-hour drive to Santa Fe. Nobody got any worse for the wear. This all started a couple days beforehand, so they kind of had peaked the day that we were going. So that was kind of a lost day anyway.
Yeah, there you go. So, strategic. I like it.
Yeah, they were in the car. You know, we drove down there. We got there, and they were like, okay, we just want to hang out in the condo. We're like, okay, great. That's great. But we're in a different place now, so that's good.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were in this – we did a VRBO rental, and it was – so I don't know if you know anything about Santa Fe or if you've ever been there, but everything is very Southwestern. And they have all these little Adobe style places. So we rented a place that was not too far off the Santa Fe Plaza, which is kind of like the main tourist area. It's pretty cool. They've done a lot of architectural preservation from the stuff that's been there since like the 1600s. And so that's really cool to see and hang out in. But the place that we were in had old Adobe style, you know, the outside looked like an old Adobe house, and the inside had the traditional Adobe architecture. It was a modern build. I think they had remodeled it in the 90s or whatever. But anyway, my wife and I are hanging out in the backyard with a chimenea fired up. We've got glasses of wine and chocolate. The kids are all, you know, hanging out in bed. One of them still has a fever, and I'm like, if I'm going to be stuck at home, you know, at least I'm stuck at home in a different city.
There you go.
And after that, it actually got better. Like the next day, they were more energetic, and we went to the plaza for a couple of hours, and we all just walked around and did some shopping. And then they were like, oh, we're kind of done. And I'm like, okay, great. So we went back to the house, and we still ended up going out to dinner that night. And, you know, the next day they got to do a little more, and the next day they did a little bit more than that. And we went to this cool place called Meow Wolf, which sounds really bizarre. But I encourage all of you to go to meowwolf.com. Because it's just it defies explanation. That's
okay.
All I will say.
There you go. That's a good cliffhanger for us.
Yes, it's an interactive art exhibit, and there's no way to really explain it. It was absolutely hilarious and bizarre and fun and weird, and the kids loved it and we loved it, and you know, I was glad that they had finally recovered enough to go do that. So all in all, our vacation turned out to be quite excellent. And then on the drive home, you know, everything was fine. So
yeah. So this brings up, I think, an interesting question. And we've talked about it or talked around it a little bit on previous episodes. But as a question from Duncan Murtaugh about – he emailed in and asked about how and if we take real vacation as founders and what that looks like. And I think this is a really interesting question because, like, we have the distinct privilege and opportunity to work whenever we want, which means it could be never, but it more often is all the time, right? And we are, I don't want to say slaves to our businesses, but I think those of us who aren't as organized and systematized do end up just working a lot. As our businesses get bigger, we work more, and it's harder and harder to take real time away. Like, one of my goals for last year, I know, was to take 2 weeks off, and I barely got a week off right at the end of the year around Christmas. But I know now, 4 months later, I couldn't do it again because our business has changed a little bit. But so Duncan was kind of asking, how do you guys view and how do you sort of practically take real time off work? So I don't know, it might be interesting to kind of bat that around since you just survived what sounded like a rather eventful trip. Did you work while you were on vacation or was it full on vacation?
Well, so I think we have to define what it would mean for me to work in that context.
Yeah, very good point.
So first of all, you know, when I go on vacation over the past few years, I have a policy that says basically I'm trying to minimize the amount of stuff I have to do while I'm on vacation. That doesn't mean it's zero. And it will mean that if there's an emergency or something's going sideways, I will, you know, set aside whatever I was doing and work on that, because that has happened a couple of times. And that's unfortunate. You know, you can't really plan for outages or downtimes or whatever. And actually, I had a minor outage while I was down in New Mexico. Recapture had some issues for about an hour and a half. There was an Amazon infrastructure issue. And it affected us, and we were trying to figure out what the hell it was, and, you know, it stressed me the heck out. My wife sort of took it all in stride.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with that said, here's sort of my general plan when I'm on vacation. I will do a brief check once a day, and if that check surfaces that there's no pressing issue that really has to be handled right then and there, that it is not time sensitive, it's not – you know, somebody's got a refund or a billing issue or the system is down or they're super pissed off, or if it isn't something like that, I set it aside and let it ride for 24 hours more, maybe more, depends on what it is. Over the weekends, I will absolutely let it ride longer. If it's during the week, I'll sort of weigh, you know, is this like a 5-minute thing by delaying it? Am I, you know, making this worse than it really is or whatever. But so I'll try to, you know, do a little triage, see what's going on. If it's not that big of a deal, I'll just clear out my inbox to the stuff that can wait and move on to the next day and go on to whatever the activities are that we're doing. I try to batch that up. So I'll do it either like right at the beginning of the day before we're going to set out on the activities while the kids are kind of fooling around, getting ready, eating, whatever it is, or at the end of the day when they're showering, finishing dinner, whatever. I'll kind of pick a time when the downtime of the family in general is kind of at its peak and take advantage of that time, because I can use – I can do what I'm talking about here in usually less than an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I just grab that hour when it's convenient to the family and I'm not taking away from the time, then I'll do that. And I know that the business is handled and it's okay. And I can go on and go back to enjoying what it was. So it takes my stress level down and it also makes sure that the business is running. Now, with that said, I wasn't really able to do that until I fully hired out somebody to support the plugins and deal with the heavy lifting part of that. It used to be that I would spend 2 hours a day reliably every single day. I didn't get a day off, and I usually batched it up at the end of the day. So what I would end up doing is my wife would be exhausted and the kids would go to bed and maybe we'd watch a movie or something. But as soon as she fell asleep, computer came out. I started working on my stuff, and then 2 hours later, I went to bed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's usually what it was before I hired out. So having good systems, good processes in place, a strong infrastructure so that you know things aren't going to go down. Like the way that Recapture is really built, it takes a lot to take it down, and I'm very thankful of that. But when something does go down, you know, you do have to kind of go and deal with it right away. But that's what I've done. And instead of trying to take one long swath, like 2 weeks at a time, I have found that it's a little more successful because I'm still freelancing and I need to get that income because there are hours for dollars that need to be traded. And as a result of that, I try to take more frequent vacations but make them shorter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this year we're going to try for a week in the summer to Oregon where we take the whole family up there. But it'll probably be similar to my past experiences where I've had 5 or 7 days or whatever. But that's the longest vacation I'll take all year. We've got some other ones. We're going to do like 3 or 4 days around the 4th of July. We did 5 days down in Santa Fe. We'll probably do something toward fall break when it comes up in October, 3 to 4 or 5 days. I don't know. We don't have anything specific yet. I may take a few days around Christmas. You know, that's kind of my MO, is try to take frequent breaks so that it doesn't get to be like, oh my God, I really need a vacation.
Yeah.
But by the same token, you know, not so long that it really affects my cash flow either. So that's kind of my whole layout for that, Duncan. I hope that helps. Now, what's your strategy, Craig?
Yeah, so I guess it's similar. I'm sitting here nodding my head a lot at the, like, after my wife goes to bed or the kids are watching a movie, I'll stow away and do some work. The last trip we took, we just took my computer, which was an interesting thing. So, like, we just do, like, Netflix and stuff like that. But my computer was the one that was the movie-watching computer and the work computer. So I didn't have the time to, like, multitask while the kids were watching a movie or something like that. So that was a little more difficult. But
interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and so
we've got the iPads.
Yeah.
So the kids will watch on iPads, and then we watch on my computer. But, you know, when we're not watching on my computer, then it becomes the work computer as well.
So. Yeah, I won't make that mistake again, but this was kind of a lightweight trip. We were it was the first time we all actually traveled with just a carry-on bag. All the four of us, even my son who's 5, had his own little carry-on bag, and we did that for a week. So that was really cool to be able to do that. But part of that was like not a lot of stuff. But generally I'm similar that we take a lot of trips. And I guess I feel a little bad that I'm always kind of working. Not always, but like I don't take days, like entire days off, but I'm always able to go do stuff. I mean, I take my kids to school and I pick them up every day. I'm available for, you know, field trips and stuff. And we go to lunch with our kids once a week and stuff like that. And so like, it's kind of like the trade-off that I have like with my wife and with our family is that like, I'm always around, but I'm not around all the time, you know? So like, it's not exactly the same thing that like, even when we're traveling, I do have to work some, but it means that we can travel basically any time that we want. We have 2 weeks off here starting at the end of this week and we're taking 2 different trips, which is super cool. But I will need to work some on both the trips. So I think from my perspective, I'm cool with not taking time completely off because I get to take a lot of time, even if it's not a week at a time, I'm able to take a lot of time where I only work an hour or two a day and we take really cool vacations and I still get whatever, like 80% of my productivity done. Because I think we've definitely talked about this before that I'm hyper productive when we're on vacation because I do have like that hour in the morning, an hour in the evening when I'm just firing through emails and support and delegating stuff to the team and stuff like that. I'm much more productive on an hourly basis than I am like today when I sat in front of my computer for 9 hours and really like, I don't know what I did today, you know, like, but when we're on vacation, I know I have to get the same amount of shit done, but in 2 hours instead of 9 hours. So yeah, I mean, I think longer term when I look at it and say like, and this is really kind of the end goal of the question for me is like, I can't run the scale of business that I want to have like this, you know? So like I have to put systems and processes in place and bring people on and train them. And like, we have a new support person, relatively new, about 6 weeks on for Castos that is coming along. But it's a process for me to put the documentation and like the internal documentation and the support training and stuff like that for him to get up to speed to where he reliably and repeatedly takes that off my plate. So I don't have to worry about it, but it just means I'm going to go do something else with that hour a day. Like I like working and I work, I don't know, a lot, I guess, but I really, really enjoy it. So like the hour I get to work when I'm on vacation every day is really cool. And it's kind of like my time to be creative or to be productive and get like some self-worth. Because that's like a big part of my value of being like self-employed or whatever. But I balance that with saying like, I don't want to be answering support tickets for the rest of my life. And I do want to build a really big business, kind of like we were talking about with Patrick Campbell and like some of the decisions that they've made at ProfitWell to build a business that could be really big. I'm finding now that the time I'm spending needs to be much more productive is not the word, but like scalable, you know? So I know that's not exactly the question, but that's kind of where I am with like how I spend my time and when I don't work as much, how I feel about it.
It's interesting that you have guilt about sort of splitting your work time with your vacation time, because I actually feel the exact opposite. It completely takes the guilt away from me to be able to say 9 to 10 hours a day is all yours, honey, and for the kids, and we will do all kinds of cool shit if I can have an hour over here.
Oh yeah.
You know, I feel like that's such a perfect trade-off, and you know, like I said, it took my stress down to know everything's okay. Don't have to worry about it. You know, we do have to – it does limit some of our vacation choices, and this is sort of a weird thing to say. But, like, I remember when my wife and I were dating, we used to go on camping trips where you just had zero chance of any cell coverage at all.
Yeah.
And they were awesome. I mean, you know, you're just completely disconnected. I remember doing backpacking trips like this when I was in my 20s. And we're talking about doing a backpacking trip with my oldest daughter like that this year. It won't be for very long because my wife and I are not as young as we used to be. And I guarantee you sleeping more than a couple of nights on hard ground is not going to fly.
Right, right, right.
But I mean, the experience of backpacking is still very important. And I think this would be a really great bonding experience with all of us and just have that, that opportunity to get out in the wilderness and do that. But most of our vacations, like, I'm digging through VRBO or Airbnb and I check the box that says Wi-Fi, got to have Wi-Fi, internet, whatever it is, you know, that's an absolute requirement. If I don't have something reliable in the place that we're staying, doesn't have to be, you know, something I need all day, but I do need to be able to do that 1 hour check-in. And it's also nice to do things like, you know, stream movies at night when you get back and you're tired and you just want to chill.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that makes big difference to us. But, you know, I definitely do not have any guilt whatsoever about our vacations, given that, you know, the vast majority of the time goes to the vacation and just a little bit to the business. In fact, you know, my wife and I had sort of briefly talked about what would our life look like after the kids are, you know, way older or out of the house. And I said, my location independence means we could be literally anywhere as long as we have some kind of internet connectivity that I can access, but I don't care where we are as long as that one thing is fulfilled. Oh, and it, you know, can't be cold and miserable.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we got those two, we're good. And so, you know, Alaska's out, but I think there's a lot that's in, you know,
even shitty French internet. You could survive, I'm sure.
I have no doubt. Yeah.
No. So I didn't come across. I didn't mean to come across. I guess that I have conflict, but it is. I don't know, maybe conflict is the right word. I have, like, there is definitely a balance. I don't want to say tension because that has a negative connectivity, but it is definitely a balance. I think we're saying this, a bit of the same thing. We're like, I'm on vacation. I can be on vacation a lot, but I'm also working and need to work almost every day. And that's cool.
That's better. I like that better because you want to strike the right balance.
Yeah.
I think that's what it's like. It can't be half and half. Not even, 75-25. I think that's too much. Like, the 10% working, 90% vacationing is okay in my book.
Yeah.
And it certainly seems to be okay with my wife and my family, you know?
Yeah.
My middle daughter totally gives me grief anytime that we are on vacation. And if I bust out the computer, she's like, oh, God, are you doing email again, Dad? And I'm like, yeah. Oh, that's work.
Got to pay for that vacation, baby.
And that's what I say. And, that just doesn't really register with a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
But, it's fine. It's okay. It's okay for her to remind me that, yes, I should be really spending more time doing the enjoyment. But that also, gives me a little bit of incentive to hammer through whatever it is and make sure I've got my priorities in order and then get back to the job of vacationing because that's my job with them at that time.
Yep. Yep. For sure, for sure. So we were talking a little bit before we started recording about kind of how things are going. So we haven't had an update episode in a while, so this will be largely an update episode, I think, from here forward. But business for me has been overall really good. It's been interesting to see kind of one side of my business really maturing and getting really stable. So that's like the Castos part of things. And then Sales Camp is still kind of finding its place. And that's been an interesting experience, kind of finding product market fit, and having a lot of customer conversations, which has been really fun. I know we talked about that right after I acquired Sales Camp, that I would have to have a lot of customer conversations. And it's been a really fun and interesting perspective, to hear a bunch of different types of companies talk about how they would use a referral tool. But it means we've been just doing a lot of work and haven't seen a lot of the payoffs for it yet, which is kind of frustrating. But I know that we're building a tool that's really going to have a lot of legs once we get it done. So that's been really fun. But it's trying my patience a little bit.
Yeah, I hear you on that one. So speaking of projects that have had no payoff yet, we just pushed the Shopify app for recapture to the App Store last week after a variety of minor, constant, ongoing setbacks that were just constantly kind of getting in the way of like, oh, wait, you mean I've got to do two kinds of App Store submissions? So there was a one point where I could just do the regular App Store submission. And then when I went back to it, just when it was in February or whatever it was, just when everything got finished up, I popped it up. And then all of a sudden it said, hey, look, you have to do an App Store submission for the new store and the old store at the same time. I'm like,
oh,
damn
wow.
It. So it was like twice the work, and you would think, okay, no problem, just copy and paste. No, everything changed for the new store. So they had like different graphics requirements. They were higher resolution, different kinds of screenshots, different sizes of screenshots. So I had to like redo all of the images and improve what I had already done on that. I had to update the descriptions. The description, what you actually didn't get as many characters on the new listing, so I had to like rewrite
all that. That sucks.
I'm like, and you got different tags, and they weren't the same kind of tags, so I had to do research on the tags. And then one of them, I forget which one, it was probably the new listing, it required a video.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I'm like, damn it, I was going to do that afterwards. Now, if I have to do both – and the old store was optional, so I had to get an explainer video done. That took about 2 weeks. And it's all – all of that is all done now. I finally got everything, all my ducks lined up, shoved it into the App Store. And then after I pushed it in, then a couple of days later, they kicked it back and said, oh, this doesn't install. And I'm like, what? So I had to have my developer go through and double check all of that and figure out what was going on. And he's like, well, I think it's this, but I can't really test this because we don't have a store listing. And I was like, I'm not sure where we can find the store listing. So we kicked it back in. They rejected it again a day later. So, you know, here we are. We've wasted 4 days. And then they came back with a slightly threatening note that says, if you do this again, we're going to put you not just at the end of the queue, but we're going to add a submission delay for you to work out your issues. I'm like, God damn it.
Is it not the kind of thing like you can test it on like a – can you manually install it like a WordPress plugin or –
So it took us a while to figure out how to do this. But yes, the answer is you can, but there's two ways to do it. So there's like a way that kind of circumvents the Shopify authentication process, and that's what my developer had been using up to this point. So everything after that worked like a charm.
Mm-hmm.
It was just this one piece that required OAuth submission through Shopify. But they were kind of – they were a little vague in the documentation. I mean, my developer had read through it. He said, this is what they said. You know, did I miss something here? So I went and read through it, and I was like, no, I don't think you missed anything here. This is a little strange. So eventually I figured out that after I made my store listings that there was this little button that wasn't even like a very well-highlighted call to action in the test submission area. It actually allowed me to use that as a testing platform to install my app.
Wow.
Totally not obvious for a while. So I finally went and did that and I tried it out and I was like, oh, now I got to build a test store. Now I got to add products. Now I got to. And we finally got through all of that stuff. And another day later, then everything was working. I was like, yes, yes, we got it. We're done. And I submitted it. So now we're in kind of a 2-week holding period.
Oh, wow. So they kind of spanked you for your previous regular submission time.
That's the regular submission time. They said it takes 2 weeks. Now, the first two times I pushed it in, I heard back from them within 24 hours. I haven't heard back from them this time. So I'm thinking maybe I got an implicit punishment because I can tell the minute they install that app.
Yeah.
Because I look at my dashboard and I'll see something there with a new Shopify install, and I don't have that many Shopify installs. It's pretty easy to track.
Right.
So I haven't seen anything yet. That was on Monday when I submitted all that finally. So now I'm definitely going to have it ready before Shopify Unite. But, you know, this was something that we had said we were going to have done by December, and then that turned into January, and then it turned into February, and then I thought, "Oh, hey, look, it's all done in February." But then I took most of March just messing around with all this ancillary side crap. But it's done. It's in there. It's done. Done, done, done. Oh, and I forgot that we were also messing around with the fee plans. So I realized that we didn't have a free fee plan for recapture. And I needed that. I really felt like I needed that in order to make it more attractive in the App Store, because there's so many listings there that are like, we do it for free. We do it for free. And they list things by price. So if you're like the guy that says, oh, we're $49 a month, you know, lots of people are going to go cruising right over your listing there. And, you know, maybe that's good, maybe that's bad, but I felt like not having a free plan at that level could be possibly problematic. So I had my developer look into this. I said, well, what is it going to take to go to a completely value-based system? So we start charging basically in buckets of how much we recover for you. And it turned out that
sounds
that
familiar.
Shockingly. I wonder where we got that idea from. Yeah, so I took Patrick's suggestion and dug into that, and it was going to be like 3 weeks of work. And I was like, damn it, no, I can't do that. So I said, well, what if we just added a free plan that limited the number of emails that you could send and gave you just a couple of features but nothing else? And he's like, oh, I can do that in a day. I'm like, done, right there, do it.
Yeah.
So we did that and then shoved that out the door. So, you know, lots of things have changing. He's still working on the value-based stuff, but at least now I've got the Shopify thing in process. And then when that's ready and the Shopify thing is listed, I can do an update. And, you know, at least I'll still have something in the store, so I'm not like completely shutting off my prospects. I'll just have like a grandfathering period where I have to transition that. So it's not horrible, but, you know, it's just – there are so many things you never expect are going to hold you up, and they hold you up.
Yeah, yeah. With Shopify generally, I mean, I know you've kind of been through the hoops of getting approved.
What is the marketing ability or plan with Shopify, kind of, I guess, relative to WordPress? Like, can you, run ads or be sponsored, or do you get email addresses? Like, what does that look like?
Well, in many ways, so there are strong similarities and strong differences. It's not really like a significant overlap in one category or another. So in the similarity category, the SEO and the searchability of your listing in the store is very much controllable by you, and it's something that is a little easier to game than you would get with Google. But there are always limitations on that. So if you like do obvious keyword stuffing, they're going to be like, no, we're rejecting this. Sorry. Mm-hmm. But you can be subtle about it and still end up with a lot of keywords in there, but it just has to read and look natural. So, you spend some time on that to optimize your thing. I've tried to figure out what the search algorithm looks like in the Shopify store. And it's not obvious that there is one that's easily discernible. I'm sure that there is one. That's got to be one. But it's not obvious to me yet what it is. Because sometimes I will go in, like I visit the store fairly frequently, and I look in the categories where I think I'm going to be in. And what's weird is the order of the listings is constantly changing in there.
Oh, well, even if you look for the same thing, the results are different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm thinking that's good and that's bad. It's good because there's always a chance you could get to the top of the list. It's bad because once you get to the top of the list, you can't stay at the top.
Stay there.
So yeah. that's very unlike WordPress.org, where you get to the top of the list, you can hang on to that position if you just don't do certain stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
So at least it's more of a reliable source of traffic. But I can see why Shopify would want to change that up, because you wouldn't necessarily want to keep just the same apps at the top all the time. Also, I know that there are some other factors that go into where you get ranked in Shopify. So they strongly take a look at your your reviews. They take a look at number of installs. They take a look at uninstalls. They take a look at what features you have integrated with. So if there's something that they themselves want to highlight or emphasize – if you integrate with it and none of the competitors do, you actually have a good chance of being featured by the Shopify apps team, because they want to highlight whatever that is.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So with that in mind, I've added integrations into the marketing API so that I can make sure that I'm part of that. And hopefully that, gives me a little bit of visibility there. But in terms of like a marketing plan with the App Store, just getting into the App Store was really our basic plan at that point.
Okay.
I don't know what more I can do to control that so much. We'll kind of see how it goes. But just getting in there was really the plan. After that, what I plan to do, is that I want to do paid promotion at that point. And that paid promotion is probably going to look like sponsored podcast episodes. It's going to look like podcast tours. It's going to be some Facebook ads that bring people to landing pages on my site that I can turn around and nurture with campaigns over time. So I wouldn't necessarily say, hey, come sign up for Recapture. It'll be like, hey, you look like a person that's interested in Shopify and e-commerce and store-related stuff. So come over here to my den of information and I shall give you lots of it. And hopefully
you will love my quality content. Yeah.
I woo you with my quality content. And try to nurture that as a pipeline there. And then to be a little more blunt and blatant, I might actually try to go for some straight up paid advertising, but on non-traditional channels. Like, I'm actually seriously considering Bing, and I never thought I would hear myself say those words.
Huh. Interesting. No, I think generally, some of these non-traditional channels are really worth looking at. We have experimented with, I don't mean to be opaque, but we've experimented with a non-traditional channel and of like straight up paid acquisition, and it's worked really well so far. I think everyone says it's either AdWords or Facebook ads, And it doesn't have to be that. And you can get intent-based purchases for clicks for a couple of dollars. And, you know, if your conversion and your messaging is right, you know, conversions for $20 or $30, which is great. You know, if you have an LTV of anything that's decent, that's fantastic. So I think you're spot on that, you know, all these people running these complex Facebook ad campaigns with retargeting and email nurturing and all that kind of stuff is great. But you could also just go spend a little bit of money to directly get somebody on your site and convert them that way. I think it's not something to overlook. Facebook is not the only game in town.
Definitely not. And of course, you know, with the whole privacy snafu, you know, I actually am a little bit, you know, I don't want to make this sound like Schadenfreude or anything like that, but I'm kind of liking the fact that Facebook is getting slapped around here, not because I want to see Zuck get taken down a notch, but I'd love to see advertising prices go down on Facebook.
Like, sure, yeah.
If I can get those clicks cheaper, because the people are likely still hanging out there, but maybe they're a little more cautious. But if I can get that same person for less money, that's great for me and my business. So, you know, if that's what that ends up, you know, translating into, I'm totally fine with it. So,
I'd love to dig back into what we talked about with Patrick Campbell and value-based pricing, because we're changing the whole model of kind of how Sales Camp works and not like the business objective, but it relates to pricing as well. You know, before the tool was all about like traffic and lead generation. And now we're directly integrating with your Stripe account and we're tracking purchases and conversions instead of like leads and email signups. So curious how, and so as part of that, we're changing our pricing structure. We're actually keeping the same tiers and the same dollars per tier, but we're attaching revenue value to each tier. So like our lowest tier is for up to, I don't even remember, $1,000 in referred revenue is our lowest tier. And then it's like $5,000 and $15,000 in referred revenue. How did you go about creating your new pricing tiers after like we had our conversation with Patrick and all that?
So I actually had a hard time when I sat down to do that, because I wasn't really sure offhand how I was going to sort of build that. But eventually I came around to, you know, kind of just looking at competitors and see how they did it. And I was trying to figure out how would that work and how do I not make it look like that 3%, which makes things look more expensive, but how do I still provide like really good ROI? Because I think that's a great selling point of recapture, and I don't want to lose that. Like, that's the one thing I want to make sure I preserve, that people walk in and they feel like, wow, I'm getting like so many multiples over what I'm paying that I just don't want to quit this service. That's the impression I want to leave them with. So with that in mind, I sat down in a spreadsheet and I tried to figure out what buckets would give me a decently high multiple on the recovered revenue that they're getting for the price that they're paying. And I took it from the midpoint of the bucket. So I would take, and I'm not going to, the numbers aren't final yet, so I'm not going to throw out my exact numbers, but.
No, it's the framework that's more important, I think, anyhow.
Yeah. And it's easier to work with some round numbers here than it is with my specific numbers, because then the math gets harder. So let's say you have a bucket between 5,000 and 10,000. Okay, as you know, inferred revenue or recovered revenue or whatever. So the midpoint of that bucket is $7,500, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's halfway between 5 and 10. And what I wanted to do was make sure that that midpoint was a significant multiple over what that tier cost. And so I experimented with a variety of things. I think I found out that my average multiple based on my tier pricing was somewhere between 50 and 60. So that's what I ended up sort of picking out as, if it's at least that they're recovering 60x over what they're paying, then I'm okay with those prices, because I feel like that was going to still move the needle significantly enough to make them want to sign up for it.
That's crazy. No, that's great. That's really great to hear. Yeah, I guess I'm doing something. I'm doing something similar. And my numbers are even weaker. And I don't mean to say that in a negative way. I've heard 5 times as the number you should go for.
I remember signing up for Carthook years and years ago, that Jordan was telling me that he wanted to make sure I was getting at least 10x on the return. Yeah. I'm getting more than 10x, but he always said at least 10x on the return.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm shooting too low. Maybe I'm just, you know, being too kind about that. But there are a number of competitors out there. And one of the things that is kind of frustrating is that I don't know that all the customers necessarily view you as significantly different, even though you might have different features, even though you might be easier to use, you got a better interface or whatever. I don't know that it's immediately obvious offhand that that's what you get. So
yeah,
if I had a higher ROI, I figure that's something that really sticks with somebody who's dealing with money all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this is the reason I brought it up. I think it's such an interesting thought experiment around like how we view the value that our customers should get versus, and it's impossible to know without kind of talking to them and being in their head and being a customer potentially yourself, but like, how would you feel about getting only 10x what you're paying something versus like what you're talking about? And I think what our sales camp prices will end up being, which is like 30 or 40 times the price you pay, you should expect to get as a return. Yeah, I mean, that's just crazy, crazy difference and crazy range. Like if you think about like the elasticity of price that you might have, you could triple your price, and still potentially have like a good ROI in your customer's eyes. And that's something I'm thinking about with like how pricing can change as the age of your tool, as your tool kind of ages and gets more mature. Like, can you just charge more just because you've been around longer? And I think the answer is yeah.
I think that that's a possibility. I hadn't really looked at it that way. And I think I'm actually going to bounce that off of Patrick once I come up with a final model and say, dude, am I still leaving way too much value on the table? And if he comes back and says, Dave, you are high as a kite, don't do this. Lower your price, you know, or like lower the buckets or raise the prices or something, you know, you got to get more value out of this than what you have now. Then I'll know that I underpriced it. But,
yeah,
you know, I would be curious to see what he says at this point. And he's probably going to be like, do a pricing survey. And I'm like, well,
that sounded really complicated.
Well, no, it doesn't sound complicated at all. But like when Heaton did his pricing survey, and I presume you've been following that on his Product Habits email list. He came back with like 1,000 responses or something like that, or 100 responses, some statistical number that I am not going to be able to get out of the recapture customer base. So, you know, the problem with a small subset of answers is you get really skewed results if people have wildly different views.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to say that this yields no information, but having really weird information, I don't know, is better than taking a strong stab at what historical precedent has to say either, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that one has really improved over the other. Ideally, you want 1,000 people that are telling you what the hell your prices should be. But
not,
I think
not likely.
End,
yeah.
I'm not going to get 1,000 people. I don't have 1,000 active customers in recapture, so that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's interesting. I think going back to kind of, I was talking about at the beginning, we've been talking to a lot of customers for sales camp around kind of what they're looking for and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know, maybe I'm lazy or we don't have a lot of data points. We've talked to 7 or 8 customers and they're all saying the same thing. And to me, that's like, okay, that's for me good enough right now. Like we're not going to go build Dropbox or Google or something like that. But we have a handful of customers that are saying they need the same thing. We're going to go build it for them. Pricing sounds about right. And so we're going to go for it. And I think you're kind of in the same boat where like you have a handful of good validated data points and go with it, try it, see what it, you know, looks like and feels like in the real world, see what your conversions are like. And then go from there. I think looking at getting a huge set of data before you make a decision can be like a little paralyzing in some respects. So I think you're right on to say, like, I have some data I feel really good about. We're going to make a decision based on this and go forward and see kind of whether it flips or flies from there.
Yep. Yeah. You can't just stand still waiting for the answers to come dropping in your lap out of the magical blue ether of Google spreadsheets or whatever.
Right.
Or hope that, you know, if you run enough surveys, you're going to finally get enough information for it. That just doesn't happen. So.
No. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So are you off to MicroConf next week or 2 weeks?
I am. And in fact, I was thinking, and maybe I'm totally dumb in suggesting this, but I was thinking about having maybe a Rogue Startups meetup for anybody who's a podcast listener to come get together. I would love to meet everybody, chat with them. You know, I get some things here and there and people run into me and they're like, oh, hey, you're Dave from Rogue Startups. And then we have a discussion or whatever. But I think it would be kind of fun to have them all in one place at one time. Maybe exchange ideas and then, you know, just have that as an event. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great idea. I'm super jealous that I won't be there, but I totally think it would be a great idea. Even if it's just, you know, not like you're sponsoring happy hour or anything, but just like, hey, we're going to get together at this bar. We'd love to get together. You know, come on over if you're around would be super cool. Yeah.
And if you give me your credit card number before I go, we'll make sure that you can sponsor it instead, or, you know, we'll put it under Castos, right?
since I'm not there, I can just pay for it. That's very fair. Yep.
Exactly. Well, you know, I suppose you could do the same to MicroConf Europe for me.
There you go.
Yeah.
So MicroConf is when?
April 30th through May 2nd.
Okay. So we got a couple weeks after this episode, we'll go live. Yeah, if anybody's interested, you can either tweet at us or drop a comment in the comment area below this post. And let us know, yeah, if you're going to be in Vegas for MicroConf, either Starter Edition or Growth. I think Dave will be overlapping a little bit. You know, Dave will look at organizing some time to get together for sure.
Yep, that sounds good. And I think we should probably tweet it out of our Rogue Startups account too, for anybody who's not totally caught up in all the episodes, because that would really suck if they like went to MicroConf, missed it, and then the week they got back they finally got to listen to this episode.
Yep.
So
sounds good.
Yes, keep an eye on our Twitter accounts for the actual date and time of said gathering.
Awesome. And yeah, if everybody's enjoying the show, we'd love a quick review in iTunes. Drop us a note, even just 5 stars to say that you're enjoying it would be great. And if you have any questions for us, shoot us a message, podcast@roguestartups.com. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.